That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police.
You are listening to Radio Copwatch on 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston, a monthly segment of Sexto Soul where we talk about cops, criminal justice, and our communities. Stay tuned.
A poem for José Campos Torres. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more poems like this. I had confessed to myself all along, tracer of life, poetry, trends, that awareness, consciousness, poems that screamed of pain and the origins of pain and death had blanketed my tablets, and therefore my friends, brothers, sisters, in-laws, outlaws, and besides, they already knew. But Brother Torres, common ancient bloodline Brother Torres, is dead. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more poems like this. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more words down about people kicking us when we're down, about racist dogs that attack us and drive us down, drag us down and beat us down. But the dogs are in the street. The dogs are alive and the terror in our hearts has scarcely diminished. It has scarcely brought us the comfort we suspected. The recognition of our terror and the screaming release of that recognition has not removed the certainty of that knowledge. How could it? The dogs, rabid, foaming with the energy of their brutish ignorance, stride the city streets like robot gunslingers and spread death as night lamps flash crude reflections from gun butts and police shields. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more poems like this. But the battlefield has oozed away from the stilted debates of semantics, beyond the questionable flexibility of primal screaming. The reality of our city, jungle streets and their gestapos has become an attack on home, life, family, philosophy, total. It is beyond a question of the advantages of didactic niggerisms. The motherfucking dogs are in the street. In Houston, maybe someone said Mexicans were the new niggers. In LA, maybe someone said Chicanos were the new niggers. In Frisco, maybe someone said Orientals were the new niggers. Maybe in Philadelphia and North Carolina, they decided they didn't need no new niggers. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more poems like this, but the dogs are in the street. It's a turnaround world where things are all too quickly turned around. It was turned around so that right looked wrong. It was turned around so that up looked down. It was turned around so that those who marched in the street with Bibles and signs of peace became enemies of the state and risk to national security, so that those who questioned the operations of those in authority on the principles of justice, liberty, and equality became the vanguard of a communist attack. It became so you couldn't call a spade a motherfucking spade. Brother Torres is dead. The Wilmington 10 are still incarcerated. Ed Davis, Ronald Reagan, James Hunt, and Frank Rizzo are still alive, and the dogs are in the motherfucking street. I had said I wasn't gonna write no more poems like this. I made a mistake.
Bienvenidos, Houston. You are listening to Radio Copwatch, a monthly segment of Sexto Soul, where we talk about cops, criminal justice, and our communities. In the studio tonight, we've got two very special guests. Our first guest in the studio will be Renee Feltz, who many of you know is the co-news director here at KPFT. We will be talking tonight about criminal justice, how it's covered by the mainstream media, and how it's covered here at this station. We'll also be talking a little later on this evening with Marilyn Head of Corpus Justice. She's here to talk about the recent police behavior study the Corpus Justice Civilians Down in Copwatch conducted, and we'll be addressing a number of other issues having to do with public attitudes with police. I want to go ahead and thank each and every one of you for listening to Radio Copwatch. You can check out the Houston Copwatch site at www.houstoncopwatch.org. You can also check out the Sexto Soul website at www.bellyofthebeast.org. And, of course, you can always check out this radio station site at www.kpft.org. I appreciate you listening. Please stay tuned.
The cops try to say I'm under arrest for nothing. Since I'm young and paid, driving a big truck, one of the main reasons they don't give a fuck. When you got a warrant, that's not good. Dirty cops throw your hands on a hot hood. Getting frisked by the you-know-who. Crooked-ass detectives don't even have a clue. When it's time to run, I jump gates, throw milk crates. Do your shit up state. First lap, already trying to bust caps. Talking about they trying to get somebody first back. They want to see me under the precinct. Getting disrespected, treated undecent. That's why I bounce when they pass by. Fuck that, I ain't going out like the last guy.
It's a dirty game out there. Cooking cops, take your shots. Niggas say your names out there. This ain't your block, I got this on that. Run the cribs with kids and blow wigs back. Police is grimy, looking like crimey. Ready to lock me up, riding by me. I just put my game face on. Five of us deep, all singing the same song.
Put your hands up, yeah, I know what time it is. We all going, whether the shit's mine or his. Trying to catch a nigga six in the morning. In my boxes, catch a nigga while he yawning.
Ain't no family now.
I can't get locked up, there's no stash for the bail now. So a nigga gotta change the routine. Take a little trip OT, catch a new scene. Playing big man games, did not say no names. And I don't even sell dope or cocaine. In the streets, my block's full of track stars. Everybody trying to look like some rap star. For every dirty cop, there's another block full of hard rocks about to get got. DTs, when they pass us, they harass us. I gotta rock a vest cause they even blast us.
It's a dirty game out there. Cookie cops, take your shots. Niggas saying names out there. This ain't your block, I got this on that. Running cribs with kids and blow wigs back. Police is grimy, looking like Tommy. Ready to lock me up, ride by me. I just put my game face on. Five of us deep, all singing the same song.
They never seen me coming, jumping over their car like that badge don't mean nothing. My third strike, see me on a dirt bike. All they know is that he's black and his shirt's white. I have no regards for authority. All I know is that I'm getting money and got more to see. When they start with that, come out with your hands up. Talking about put his ass in handcuffs. I'ma hit the back streets, throw the heat in my man's Jeep. While it's moving, it's that deep. I can't sleep cause I'm penoid. Always looking out for unmarked cars and decoys. It's a jungle, so I got a good lawyer. And all y'all DAs, I got something for you. I'm still getting blunted when the cops is coming. Shots got me 100 miles in front.
It's a dirty game out there. Cookie cops taking shots. Niggas saying names out there. This ain't your block, I got this on that. Running cribs with kids and blow wigs back. Police is grimy, looking like Tommy. Ready to lock me up, riding by me. I just put my game face on. Five of us deep, all singing the same.
It's a dirty game out there. Cookie cops taking shots. Niggas saying names out there. This ain't your block, I got this on that. Running cribs with kids and blow wigs back. Police is grimy, looking like Tommy. Ready to lock me up, riding by me. I just put my game face on. Five of us deep, all singing the same song.
Welcome back. You are listening to Radio Cop Watch, a monthly segment of Sexto Sol, where we talk about cops, criminal justice, and our communities. And we have indeed talked a lot about criminal justice issues, how the system works and how it doesn't work, and ways that we can change it. We are going to be talking tonight in the studio with someone who has been on the front lines of a lot of these issues. She is Renee Feltz. She is co-director of KPFT News, has covered many of these issues, and has also been a social justice activist and has developed her own ideas about this, of course, and want to go ahead and welcome her to the show.
It's great to be here and an honor to be on Sexto Sol, where you guys do cover a lot of important issues yourself.
And it's an honor to have you on the show, no doubt about it. Now, can you give me a little bit, or give not just me, you want to give all the listeners as well, a little bit about yourself and tell people about how you kind of got interested in a lot of these issues and why you cover what you cover, basically.
Well, hi, my name is Renee Feltz. I also go by Chickpea, which speaks a little bit to my activist background here in Houston. And my awareness of criminal justice issues really came about when I was active around the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, who is, of course, a political prisoner in Pennsylvania. The case against Mumia Abu-Jamal opened my eyes in the sense of what the criminal justice system can be used for in addition to providing public safety or enhancing it. And we could go into more details about that later if we want, but that's really how my eyes got open to the criminal justice system. And the way that it's affected the work that I do here as a staff member at KPFT, part of the big Happy Pacifica Network family, has been that my beat at KPFT News, where I'm co-producer, has focused largely on issues of prisoners, prisoner conditions, the death penalty in general, police brutality, and overall public safety. Again, I think that we're not just looking to slam something or to criticize, but we're also looking to enhance the well-being of people both inside and outside prison walls.
Now, can you compare that approach to what we see in mainstream media, what people see on TV or they may read in the Chronicle or whatever else?
Sure. One of my favorite examples of that is the Kmart raid that happened in Houston last March. One reason it got a lot of attention is because it's the largest police bust in terms of people arrested in recent U.S. history. But it also drew a lot of attention because, I guess, a large number of the kids that were rounded up in the parking lot that night while hanging out in front of Kmart were white. And when the mainstream media covered this issue, I think it's an example of a little bit of sensationalism, you know, a lot of people arrested, ooh, big brouhaha, but also a little bit of, shows us how the mainstream media tends to focus on the main people that consume the products that they show in between news segments and the commercials. So they're going after a commercial audience with lots of spending power, and that's generally people with more money and often whites. But something that was interesting about the Kmart raid and how KPFT News approached covering that is that we talked about the fact that this kind of roundup isn't really all that unusual in the sense that young people living in the inner cities, or if we want to call them target areas, neighborhoods that are a little less well-to-do than the area where the Kmart was located. The raids happen all the time there. Kids are rounded up a lot in, for example, 3rd Ward and 5th Ward, where we see another example in Houston history of a police bust of young people who were cruising near McGregor Park on Martin Luther King Boulevard and other areas around there. And the police had the courtesy there not just to arrest people, but to do things like turn a fire hydrant on them and spray them with water hoses and things like this. And so we've seen negative and harsh treatment of young people just kind of trying to have a good time, not necessarily engaged in illegal activity for the most part. We've seen this kind of treatment of young people by HPD in the past. And so a difference between the mainstream media and KPFT's approach is that we kind of give you a broader look at the issue here and expand it beyond just, well-to-do people, young white teenagers, and to look at the whole problem.
Can you tell me a little bit about stories that you've reported on? You mentioned that you cover criminal justice or a lot of these issues for KPFT News. Is there anything in particular you're really happy to have covered, you're really proud of having really reported on or brought to light?
I think one thing recently that I've had the pleasure to report on that's good news is a case of death row prisoner in Texas, Delma Banks. Delma was a young man at the time. He was convicted of killing his teenage friend and co-worker. He was a young black man in North Texas, convicted by an all-white jury. And when KPFT News, and I guess myself in particular, started to look at the case and calling attorneys and things like this, these people really hadn't talked to many reporters before. And I kind of, you know, I was proud of the fact that with Banks and with other death penalty cases that I've covered, we're going where few reporters have gone before, and we're really covering underrepresented problems. And with the Texas death penalty, there's a lot to cover. With Delma Banks, it was also nice to cover it because we got some good news. He did receive a stay based on a decision by the Fifth Circuit that saw his case had a lot of problems. For example, two of the people that testified against him, in order to convince the jury during the penalty phase of the trial that Banks would be a future danger to society, although he had no previous criminal record, these two people turned out to be paid informants by the state. Now, you would have known this, and Banks's attorney would have known this if he had actually acquired the criminal background records of the witnesses. But the prosecutors in the case failed to provide this information to his attorney, and he failed to ask for it, essentially. So anyway, that case that could have kind of simply been thrown out based on issues like that, instead wound up having Delma Banks be on death row longer than any other prisoner in Texas, death row prisoner. He's seen every single person on that death row that's been executed go to their death. Anyway, you know, this all could have been avoided simply had reporters at the time been following the case and kind of been asking some questions, looking at the case more clearly. Anyway, so I'm glad that we covered it sort of at the tail end. I'm glad that we got to report the good news about the Fifth Circuit's decision. And now, recently, we got to give an update that the Supreme Court has agreed to hear his case and take a pretty critical look, essentially, at the Texas death penalty system.
Pretty incredible. The background that you mentioned brings a little bit of necessary, I guess, skepticism may be a good word, to the official story. How do you think your journalistic style and your experiences bring out the full story, like in the Banks case?
I think a background of being critical of the government and of not taking their press releases and their spokespersons at face value, but looking a little bit deeper, has really complemented the way we do stories. I am not only a reporter, I'm a producer, and on KPFT News, one of our reporters, Ana Nunez, covers a lot of border issues and immigration issues, which of course involves criminal justice. We've got a lot of police officers working with immigration officials apparently along the border. And I found out that a case down there in Juarez, Mexico, where there's been a history now for over a decade of women disappearing and later being found mutilated and dead, often in the desert, just their bodies are picked up by Mexican police officials. It's been a long-standing problem in Juarez because these women's deaths have been going unsolved, and their cases are unresolved, sometimes closed, just without knowing who their killer was. Obviously, it's a big problem. Well, the FBI helped the El Paso police and Mexican authorities to set up a 1-800 number, toll-free, 24 hours, where people could anonymously call in tips, and they were hoping that this would help the officials in their investigation since people didn't have to obviously be linked to information when they gave it to him. Well, when I asked Ana Nunez to cover it, I said, and make sure to look at what the victims' families think of this 1-800 toll line. Are they happy with it? Is this a really positive step in the right direction? And she did that, and in the process discovered that they were a little bit critical of it because it left the authority of doing the investigation and continuing the Juarez investigation still in the hands of the Mexican police officials, who the victims' families believe to be very corrupt. And so the 1-800 number, while on the face looks like a positive step in the right direction, it simply leaves the power in the hands of Mexican officials who have, for over a decade now, mishandled the case. Really, nothing's changed. And I think that that kind of approach of taking a critical look at what the government's telling us will help us to do better stories on these issues. For example, if you looked at the AP story, you didn't ask any of this, and just kind of gave it a glowing review, which I don't think it deserved.
I want to touch on something that you just mentioned that I think is a very important point to repeat. It's really critical that journalists start going beyond press release journalism, going beyond taking the spokespeople at face value and just kind of assuming, well, they're obviously telling me the truth. I have no other information. I don't have to do any of the footwork because it's a press conference or whatever else. How many of the stories that we see in the media, in your assessment, are accurate from the facts that you're aware of them to what you actually see on TV or what you may read in the papers?
That's an interesting question. Accuracy and rates of accuracy. Well, it's sort of a gray area. It blends into this issue of objectivity. I think that I'm sure that the majority of the reports we see coming out of mainstream media that deal with criminal justice have some accurate facts in them. And I'm sure that they, you know, that they're telling what the police believe to be correct, generally. The problem is that they're not really representing the other side of the story. And so you're not getting the full picture, and often that combination leads you to the wrong conclusion, which isn't surprising. And so I think that issues of accuracy, it's more an issue of just lazy reporters or reporters that are, I would stick with the lazy idea in some ways, because, I mean, you can just go to the press conference. You can just digest and swallow what the police chief might tell you or whoever and go and report it. It takes a lot more work to go out and talk to the victims' families if we're dealing with issues of police brutality, for example. Another, going back to the Kmart incident, when they had a press conference down in City Hall, and Mayor Lee Brown and the new police chief at the time, Chief Ottmeyer, said, oh, hey, look, everybody that was arrested in the Kmart raid is now, we're going to drop these charges against them. You know, this is great, woohoo. And all the reporters there just basically swallowed it. I was the only one that asked, hey, is everybody that was there and that got arrested going to have their charges dropped? You know, is, I kind of double checked their question, and essentially no, there were some people there that were rounded up that were later charged with unlawful possession of a weapon, and there was one drug case. And if the case itself, if the raid itself was illegal, then those charges as well, I think, should basically be dropped. And none of the reporters there asked that question. So you can see how, you know, they were accurate in reporting to the extent that most of the cases have been dropped, but they weren't accurate in saying that all of the cases have been dropped. So in terms of accuracy, I think generally they're pointing in the right direction. You know, they want to say, hey, look, a lot of this, like, for example, in the Kmart case, the police are doing the right thing. They're dropping the charges, but they're not fully accurate in the sense that they're not delving a little bit deeper and asking these other questions, if that makes any sense.
Interesting. No, I mean, I think it's a really important problem that you're, I would agree with you. I think from a factual standpoint, it's, stories are fairly accurate. There's a press conference, you report what was said. From beyond what was said, but why it was said is another thing altogether at times.
Let's look at another story that we worked on. I mean, this is kind of a fun way to look through these issues. In Baytown, there was a Mexican national construction worker beaten by police, and of course we know what case I'm talking about, the Torres case. The media eventually got all over that and were critical of the police, but they still basically, when it was all said and done, reported what the police chief out there found. What was the police chief's name? I've got it right here. Byron Jones. Let's just call people out here. So Police Chief Byron Jones there found that even though Torres was handcuffed with his hands behind his back, had been beaten while laying on the ground, and then was pepper sprayed, all of this while he was yelling at officers when an ambulance had been called, and he didn't want to get into the ambulance. So it's not like he had done some sort of violent act or anything, but all of this beating, the handcuffing, the pepper spraying, happened after his uncle had called for an ambulance to help him deal with this health attack he was having. The police chief found these officers not guilty of any wrongdoing, and a grand jury backed him up on it. And that, essentially, again, it's accurate. You know, that's what the grand jury found. But let's look at the full story here. There's a lot of other implications. Like one fact that I never saw mentioned in coverage of that case was that, in fact, a grand jury in Texas has never found any police officer guilty of beating or killing a Mexican while in custody. And that comes on the authority of Will Harrell, who's the executive director of the Texas ACLU, and he ought to know. The direct quote, "There's never once been a grand jury charged against a police officer related to the death of a Mexican in their custody." Harrell goes on to talk about how Police Chief Byron Jones, who was only temporary while overseeing the investigation, was later promoted to permanent police chief. And he, so Harrell comments that elevating the very person who ratified the killing of Mr. Torres is to send a signal that we will protect our officers even in abusive situations. And when we followed up on the Torres case long after everybody else had forgotten about it, we essentially discovered that there was an issue of public safety problem out there, because people were immigrants, nationals in Baytown, and even people that were third generation Mexican Americans, were essentially afraid to call the police because, and you know, you can even extrapolate, perhaps they'd be afraid to call for an ambulance out there. And so that's a public safety issue that I didn't see anywhere represented in the mainstream media. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Very interesting. Let's go ahead and take a quick break. We've been talking for a little bit about a lot of issues, and I want to get into a couple of other things. But let's go ahead and take a real quick break, and we'll be right back after this.
We will not bow down to a high racism. Yeah, we will not bow down to injustice. We will not bow down to exploitation. What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
I just can't tolerate racism. I just can't tolerate
injustice.
I just won't tolerate
exploitation.
What you gonna do?
I'm gonna stand.
We will not obey
racism.
We will not obey
injustice.
We will not obey
exploitation.
I'm gonna stand.
We are back. You are listening to Radio Capwatch, a segment of Sexto Sol every month where we talk about cops, criminal justice, and our communities. In the studio with us tonight is an incredibly special guest, co-news director Renee Feltz of our beloved KPFT. Having done research on my own, I've realized that there are a lot of things that are a little inaccurate or a little bit misleading if you look at the information that you pick up in the paper. As a reporter, do you see that as well?
I think you're right. We've seen many issues of cases and problems with criminal justice going unreported or underreported. And I think underreported is generally the name of the game. Something that's underreported, for example, throughout the U.S. is the high number of Americans in prison or caught up in the criminal justice system. An aspect of that that's, I think, in an underreported way out there but not really thoroughly discussed is the high rate of women who are going into prisons, mostly as a result of the drug war. Since the drug war began, essentially we've seen an 800% rise in the number of women in prisons. And so what that means is you've not only got the fathers locked up, but now you've got the mothers, you've got kids out there that are being raised by whoever is left around to raise them, not necessarily getting the best upbringing all the time, and then they're feeding directly into the prison system. All of this while education is going underfunded, and the kids really have little place else to turn. So that's an underreported issue. I think something that's a personal interest to me, since I ride a bike, that I think is unreported, is the whole issue of how bicyclist deaths and traffic accidents are dealt with. I think that generally the papers tend to report the accidents as the fault of the cyclist versus the driver, and they rarely ask, you know, any critical questions about the fact that these guys, these drivers, are generally charged with misdemeanors when they kill people. Just that seems kind of out of proportion to me. There's also an issue, I think, of the death penalty, which until fairly recently was underrepresented in news coverage. Now we're seeing it discussed more in Texas, and I think that that's partly due to stations like Pacifica, but also the mainstream press, I think, is starting to kind of just have no choice but to hear that people are dissatisfied with the fact that innocent people might be on death row and in the death chamber. I think another issue, though, that I'd want to talk a little bit about in terms of underrepresentation that I've been focusing on is the issue of private prisons. I do state, city, regional, community news, so I look mostly in terms of prison issues at Texas. Throughout the country, 1 in 10 prisoners in the prison system are in Texas prisons. And in Texas, 1 in 20 Texans are caught up in the criminal justice system in one way or the other, whether it's under probation, out on parole, or actually behind bars. And when we look at the issue of private prisons in Texas, there's a long history of problems. And I'm going to say. I'd like to play a cut from a woman, Michelle Deitch, that I spoke with recently in Austin. And rather than have me go through the litany of problems with private prisons, I'd like to listen to this first, and then we can talk a little bit about it. Play that. And it's actually, like, it's a 2-minute cut of the history of private prison problems in Texas.
Cool.
In the Brazoria County Detention Center in Angleton, guards made a training video of themselves beating, stun gunning, and unleashing dogs on naked prisoners from Missouri who were housed here. The injured inmates were dragged face down back to their cells. In Brazoria County, as well as in many other facilities, they've actually hired convicted felons as guards because they don't do criminal background checks. In Coke County, Wackenhut operated a juvenile justice center. And at that facility, several girls were sexually, physically, and mentally abused by Wackenhut employees, including a man who had a prior conviction for sexual abuse of a child. And there was a lawsuit there that was settled for $1.5 million. There were allegations made and confirmed by the Texas Youth Commission that some of the Wackenhut staff members manipulated a demotion and a graduation system to coerce some of the girls into giving them sexual favors or dancing naked in front of them. Some of the girls were actually raped or fondled or made to disrobe and shower in the presence of male employees. There were incidents at so many of the facilities. In CCA at the Eden Detention Center, they had a day-long riot involving shotgun-toting guards and 400 boisterous prisoners, and this was in a low-security facility. 17 people were hurt. Bartlett State Jail had 2 escapes followed by a high-speed car chase. Cornell Corrections was charged with violations of the Security Exchange Act. In the Dickens County facility, they had an inmate killed in a brawl. There was a riot that was halted by gunfire. In another Wackenhut facility, because this was a state jail, Willacy County, had some escapes, and afterwards, TDCJ learned that electronic sensors on the perimeter fence had not worked since the facility was built, and 6 to 8 security television monitors were inoperable, and a perimeter patrol officer was sleeping in a car the night of the escape. So what's going on in these private facilities raises serious public safety concerns.
All right, and so you can see the long history of prison problems in Texas, specifically when prisoners held in private facilities. One issue that has been totally underreported in both state and I think national news is the trend now in Texas towards privatizing more prisons. There's a bill currently that's before the House, introduced by Representative Ray Allen, who comes out of the Fort Worth area, that would lead to potentially the privatization of the entire Texas prison system. That's bad news for people inside and outside of prisons. Obviously, we just heard why it's bad news for people inside. But in terms for people outside, this really isn't the bill that it's presented to be. We all know about state budget cuts and how we need to decrease spending. Ray Allen is pushing this bill to his committee, where he's the chair of the Corrections Committee, which deals with the prison issues in the House. He's pushing it as a cost-saving measure. Even the federal government recognizes that basically you'd save about $1 a day with private prisons over public. In the process, you're going to reduce prisoner conditions to an even lower state than they already are in Texas. It's not safe for Texas prisoners. It's not safe for people on the outside, as we heard in the cut. We're seeing increased rates of escapes out of prisons when they're in private hands. This issue hasn't been looked at all. This bill, which may go forward, hasn't been looked at all. And I just think it's, I think it's important. Another aspect of this bill that people should be aware of is that even if it doesn't pass, there's one small part of it that will probably be picked up and tacked on as an amendment to something like House Bill 2, where what it would do is lift the caps on currently in Texas, there's about 4,000 state jail prison beds, and it would lift the cap on that. And that's why they say essentially the bill could lead to the privatization of the entire Texas prison system. When that bill appears as an amendment, or I'm sorry, when that amendment appears attached to another bill, it won't say anything about prisons. It'll just say something like this number 1500 or whatever the number is, provision is hereby lifted. And so even if you were looking for issues related to this, you wouldn't find it. And so that's something that's been really underreported. Another example of what's left out, even if you might see this story, for example, in the Austin American Statesman, that, oh, Ray Allen's introduced this bill could lead to the privatization of the prison system. I haven't seen anyone else note that Ray Allen, who ran unopposed during his when he last came into the House, still took money primarily from, well, a lot of money from private prison lobbyists. He took all of this in, even though he was running without an opponent. He's the chair of the Corrections Committee. Why is this necessary? I haven't seen any other reporters asking that question. The two lobbyists, amount of money that he got during his campaign against No One came from the director of the Corrections Corporations of America and his wife, Henry Weddle. They live in Tennessee. I'm not sure why they gave $15,000 to someone that doesn't even represent them in their state except to buy access. And so what we see here is the issue again of private companies and corporations in general. Their interests are being looked at over the public interest.
I can imagine someone tuning into this is a little bit concerned about, well, you've got a reporter with opinions. Imagine that. And as I'm sure you're aware, KPFT News and the station in general, not without criticism. You have people who say the reporting is biased, and you also have people who say that certain issues aren't being covered enough or whatever else. You have all kinds of criticisms from all kinds of people. How do you respond to those kinds of things?
I think that KPFT as a station has to abide by the Pacifica mission, which is to educate its listeners and to provide voices that you're not going to hear anywhere else on the FM dial. In our news stories, we're bringing you those voices, and in the sense that that may come across as unobjective to people, it doesn't surprise me. They're not used to hearing those voices. They're not used to hearing really strong criticism, especially of the criminal justice system. And that's something that may throw people off. But I think if you listen to our stories, you'll notice that if we do a story about the police brutality problem in Baytown, we try to talk to the police chief and we try to talk to city officials in addition to the victims that are voicing concern. Like if they have a protest, we'll cover the protest, but we're generally also going to try to talk to the people on the other side of the protest, the people that are trying, that citizens are trying to hold accountable. So we generally cover both sides of the issue. It's just that we'll give more time to the voices you don't hear anywhere else, and we have a mandate to do that as a Pacifica station. Another reporter on Pacifica in Berkeley, California, Dennis Bernstein, who does a nightly program during the week called Flashpoints, made a comment while he was here in Houston and giving a training to the news department that I am an objective reporter in the sense that I have an objective. And I think that, again, with myself, I have an objective to report underrepresented voices and opinions, and I'm fulfilling that. Another issue that you've got to look at is whether or not mainstream press that also presents itself as objective really is fulfilling that that mission as well. Okay, well, for example, we've seen clearly with war coverage after the toppling of the Saddam statue in Baghdad, the reporters were essentially cheering. That's not objective reporting, as far as I can tell. We all know that during times of war, truth is the first casualty. Reporters should be on guard, trying to appear as objective and accurate as possible. Cheering at that time, I think, was totally inappropriate. To show such personal glee and to make such snide comments about the easy way Iraqis fell and everything like that, that to me came off as really unobjective, and I didn't see anyone asking any questions about that. So I encourage people to keep that in mind when they're raising those criticisms. And the final thing I would say to people that have criticisms about KPFT News is come on down and try to get involved with the news department. It's mostly an all-volunteer department. We've got about 35 people stringing for us pretty regularly now. If you're concerned about the way we're covering issues, then get involved and go out and do it yourself. And don't hate the media, become the media, to refer to another organization I work with, which I should probably mention real quickly, Houston Independent Media Center, part of a global network, not just a national network like Pacifica. And that website is houston.indymedia.org. Another organization people might want to look at if they're concerned about issues of criminal justice in Houston is the Houston Peace News. Almost every issue that comes out each month includes an article about the death penalty, sometimes about police brutality. So they're real useful. I used to write for the Daily Cougar at the University of Houston, who I can't say does a very good job at looking at police issues or issues of criminal justice. For example, there's a huge problem with racial profiling by campus police that the Daily Cougar could take up and look at its own campus department and doesn't. So I used to work for these other organizations, and all of them, I think, perhaps with the exception of the Daily Cougar, are places that people can look for other unbiased, non-objective reporting. No, I'm just kidding.
I think you've kind of answered it. I think it's a valid point that those who have criticisms of the work that's going on at KPFD News should be involved.
If people have questions about how to get involved in the training, I should throw out our contact information. It's an easy way to get in touch with us is our email, news, that's news@kpft.org. Another way is to give us a call up here on the main line, 713-526-4000, and the newsroom extension is 309.
Renee Feltz, KPFT News, thank you.
Thank you, Ernesto. Keep up the good fight.
Thank you. You are listening to Radio Cop Watch, a monthly segment of Sexto Sol, where we talk about cops, criminal justice, and our communities. We're going to go ahead and take a short music break and come back with Marilyn Head, who I'm seeing at the door right now, and talk a little bit about the Police Behavior Survey. Stay tuned.
Que estoy chicano, soy chicano, sí señor.
Welcome back. You are listening to Radio Cop Watch, a monthly segment of Sexto Sol, where we talk about cops, criminal justice in our communities. We have a busy studio this evening, and we now have a very, very, very special guest. Her name is Marilyn Head. She's with an organization called Corpus Justice, which has been working very actively around issues of civilian oversight. And she is here this evening to talk about a recent police behavior study, as well as other public opinions about HPD and criminal justice in this area. Can you tell people a little bit about this police behavior survey? Now, on this show, we've talked a lot about how people feel about the police and experiences that they've had and all kinds of anecdotal types of things. But the study that Corpus Justice really spearheaded is one of the first studies in this community where we've seen citizens from all over the area really give their opinions about police and the behaviors they see on the streets.
That's right. It's just a general survey of adults that we met on the street, more or less. You know, we sponsored it with Cop Watch, your group, and the Civilians Down. We went out to the River Oaks area. We went to the Montrose area. We went downtown to the Martin Luther King Parade and to the library, Central Library downtown. And we went out in the county to Humble, Texas, and just went into parking lots or patio areas or open areas and asked people if they would fill out our survey. We had a tremendous response. We were really surprised by the way the people would really stop and say, a police survey? And we'd say, yeah. And they'd just take it and fill it out. And then afterwards they'd say, who are you with? Or something like that. And we would ask them, do you think this is a biased survey? And 99% of the people really said no, they thought it was not a biased survey. But, you know, I know some people will say, well, Corpus Justice, who's working for civilian oversight, that kind of thing, might say, well, it's like the police policing the police.
Right, hey, exactly.
I can tell you, we may be a little more honest than that.
Now, can you tell people a little bit what kind of findings came out of this study, what you saw?
Yeah, we found that people who have had negative experiences with police are solid behind the idea of civilian oversight. But those persons who have had satisfactory experiences with police, they broke down into about 27% said they would rather go to an internal affairs department of a police department. I think 3% didn't have opinion, and 11% said they didn't know. So in that group, those who have had the satisfactory experiences with police were a mixed group. But as far as those persons who have had unsatisfactory experiences, beginning with just someone, you know, a police officer talking disrespectfully to them, down to being arrested, assaulted, etc., they all are in support of civilian oversight.
What kind of numbers are we talking about of people who say they have experienced negative behavior from police?
58% said they've experienced negative behavior with police.
Wow, that's a lot of people.
That's of our survey, which was just a general survey, like I said, out on the street.
How many people were surveyed?
Over 500. Mm. We did about 565, something like that.
Now, I think I can guess a cop's, if they're listening to this, is the first criticism they would have is, well, that's not very many people. How do you respond to something like that?
Well, we just wanted an off-the-street survey, 500 people. That's quite a general survey. The results, we think, are what's important. I mean, we could have been out there and done 1,500 and probably gotten similar results.
Mm-hmm. Well, considering especially that it sounds like you hit quite a few different areas.
Right. We hit different areas, and we didn't break it down according to ethnic or racial lines, but we did go into different areas where we thought we would get a general mix. Mm-hmm. And we did get a mix from, response. We didn't ask people to check their race or ethnic, but we did find that of those persons who refused or chose not to fill out the survey, Hispanics were more hesitant to do that than any other group. And I'm not surprised, they're targeted by the police. I mean, the racial profiling issue, is a major issue in that community. And they're also fearful.
Definitely. So you also just got done doing a 48-hour survey as well.
Right. Yeah, we just did a quick 48-hour survey. We were going to Austin to talk with Representative Bailey regarding the crime lab here in Houston and his position on the intern study during the legislative break, and then civilian oversight. And for over a period of about 48 hours, we asked people to respond to questions about should the chief of police, the district attorney, even the judges, who are elected to support the law, should they be held accountable for the actions for the duty of their office and the actions of others? And out of the, we've got, in 48 hours, we got 26 back, and 23 responded yes, yes, yes. To all of these questions.
Mm.
So it was almost two or three to four would either say no or didn't have an opinion.
Now, we've seen since the Kmart raid that HPD and law enforcement in general in these areas have kind of taken stumble after stumble after stumble, screwed up shootings, mass arrests that turn out to be not what they seem, the crime lab, oversight issues in general are starting to get a little bit more interest. What is your opinion on the public's perception of all these things?
I think people who have had any experience with the criminal justice system are on to what's going on, that it's broken. And those people who haven't had any experience are living in la-la land. They've not questioned anything. It just hasn't hit home to them that it could happen to them next. In our survey, persons would say, well, we've never given civilian oversight any thought. We think the police are doing a great job. I don't know if those people don't read the newspaper or watch the news or what, but, in Harris County, we're dealing with a criminal justice system that is corrupt. I mean, there's no other word to describe it. When you have a police department that will go out and arrest over 300 people who are innocent, there's something wrong. When you have a police department that has a crime lab that's dealing with DNA and life and death issues, and they let rain flood the place, They, you know, they're pushing buckets around to adjust to the different areas where the water is pouring in. And anyone who knows anything about science knows you have to have controlled circumstances for proper evidence to be evaluated. And this goes on for years and years, and no one does anything about it. The mayor doesn't do anything about it. He knew about it. The chief of police doesn't do anything about it. He knew about it. The district attorney acts like he didn't know anything about it.
What is your perspective on all the official channels which have now started to step up and say, well, we need an independent review of all these types of things? All of them, as you just said, knew about what was going on.
Our 22 district judges, the law clearly states that they can recruit Rosenthal from the grand jury, and they choose not to do it, thinking it's more proper for him to do that himself. I mean, how corrupt can things be?
And it's kind of interesting that
they're afraid that he'll recruit them from all the cases that he takes before him.
Right. And it's interesting you mentioned that. We were just talking with our previous guest about the whole thing of the media, not necessarily inaccuracy, but misleading information. And a lot of media haven't mentioned that. Those judges have the power to go ahead and say, we are going to force you to recuse yourself from this, but they're not doing it.
It's a part of the Code of Criminal Procedure. It's just in black and white. The Civil Service Code also states specifically the reasons why a district attorney can be removed from office that are just, you know, hit the nail on the head, bing, bing, bing. I think these folks that call for independent review, they want to get it under their power and keep it under their power, and I think they'll be looking for scapegoats, not themselves. Not to be responsible for the duty of their office themselves and the responsibility of the performance of other persons, but they will zero in and scapegoat certain persons, you know, just so they can keep business going as usual. I think we've got to have a totally independent outside investigation. We need to bring someone in from outside of Harris County to investigate this. I think Representative Bailey wants to do that too, so we'll see where that goes.
Can you key people in on who Kevin Bailey is, a representative?
Representative Bailey is one of our Harris County representatives. He actually is the representative in the area where I am. I can't remember my district number. He's also the chairman of the investigating committee for the House of Representatives, who are currently investigating the crime lab. So he's actively involved in this and coming. He has subpoena power. In our conversations the other day, he said he'll ask for information from the district attorney's office, and it'll be withheld, and then he'll say to him, well, I guess I'll have to use subpoena power, and then he'll get the information he needs. But he says also that they don't give him one little thing beyond what he asks, that if he doesn't know the questions to ask and the information to seek, they have to do all kinds of, you know, checking things out to find what they need to ask for to be able to get to the bottom of the issues. So he's got a job ahead of him, a big job. An interesting thing, though, in the little survey that we did, the 48-hour survey on leadership, several people said that they would like to have a public hearing and then a special session in 2004. You know, and I think that's a great idea. We just need to keep pushing for it. And the important thing is not to let the issues die. We've got to keep we've got to make these people accountable for their actions.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. Can you give people a little bit of information about Corpus Justice, how to get in touch, and ways that they can be involved in a lot of these issues?
Right. Our phone number is 281-405-8998. And we're also online at www.corpusjustice.org.
Beautiful. Marilyn Head of Corpus Justice here with us on Radio Cop Watch, our monthly installment on cops, criminal justice in our communities. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT in Houston. I am your host, Ernesto Aguilar, and I want to go ahead and thank each and every one of you for listening to the program this evening. We're going to go ahead and wrap things up and do
thank
a little...
Thank you, Ernesto. I appreciate
thank you
being
very,
here.
Very much, and I appreciate you being here, too. For those who may be listening, you can give us a call here at 713-526- 800-585-7378. We're going to play some Grupo Fantasma and give away tickets to our first caller. No problem giving us a call here, 713-526-5738. Want to thank Motherland Entertainment, Copwatch, of course, Corpus Justice, KPFT, and you, the listeners who make this station possible. Give us a call, 713-526-5738. First caller gets the tickets, and thank you for listening. Stay tuned for Stacey Davis coming up next.
Hay que mover la mercancía, la entrega de la gente buscando su libertad. Todo tiene su precio en mi negocio de secretos. Yo siendo un Moisés cobarde en contra de la ley. Adiós abuelita, adiós mi papá, adiós mamacita, sobrinitos, mis amigos. Vendrán llegará, pagar mi precio, encontrará la libertad. Yo he movido gente de Tijuana a Matamoros, entregaos un estado, unidos a trabajar. Los jóvenes, las grandes y los hombres, las mujeres, los traigo a sus países, a un hogar de esclavitud. Los traigo de desierto, de la selva y de los ranchos, de ciudad y paraíso, yo los traigo a trabajar.
La cumbia del coyote
vendrá,
la cumbia del coyote
entregará,
la cumbia del coyote
pagar mi precio, encontrará la libertad.